William and the League of Perfect Love. William's village was greatly relieved when it learnt that Mr. and Mrs. Bott were returning to the hall. The village was tired of the eccentricity of the Pennimans, who'd been renting the Botts' mansion, and it had looked forward to the return of normality in the person of the Botts. The Pennimans' mission to bring back the morning of the world had at first seemed gloriously funny. The village attended the meetings in large numbers and staggered homewards afterwards, holding their sides in helpless mirth. A few simple souls took it seriously and got lumbago from wearing inadequate clothing and indigestion from an indiscreet diet of nuts and macaroni. But it soon became generally agreed that the Pennimans were an unmitigated nuisance. Never had the Botts been so royally welcomed home. "I say, Botty," said Mrs. Bott to her husband, "they've never seemed so pleased to see us back before. We must be sort of growing on them." "Like a carbuncle," said stout little Mr. Bott, and they both laughed uproariously at his joke. But there had been some hitch in the Pennimans' arrangements, and they asked the Botts to allow them to stay one more night. That night had been a fatal one, for in the course of it, Mrs. Bott had discovered that Mrs. Penniman was an honourable. Mrs. Bott had never met an honourable before, and insisted on addressing her as Mrs. Honourable Penniman. Mr. Bott grew more and more gloomy. Titles went to his wife's head like champagne. The Pennimans were telling her all about their mission, and she was uttering little affected cries of, "Oh, how wonderful!" And then it turned out that the hitch had upset the Pennimans' immediate plans. "Oh, but Mrs. Honourable Penniman," cried Mrs. Bott, "you must stay here as long as ever you like." Mr. Bott fell back in his chair with a little moan. Then the Pennimans decided to form the League of Perfect Love, with Mrs. Penniman as president, Mrs. Bott as secretary, and Mr. Penniman as treasurer. Mrs. Penniman was on familiar terms with various other titles, and Mrs. Bott lived in a dream of rapture. "Titles! Titles coming to the house every day, hobnobbing with her, as pally as pally!" Meetings at the hall began again with renewed vigour, and everyone who could be bullied into it was enrolled in the League of Perfect Love. Its adherents swore not to take life in any form. "The smallest creature," said Mrs. Penniman, "has as much right to live as we have. The life of a slug," she said to the head gardener at the hall, "is as precious as yours." Mouse traps and rat traps were, of course, also forbidden. Most of the members of the League possessed pet dogs, pampered poms or peaks or griffins. Refreshments were always provided after the meetings, with dishes of creamed chicken for "our little doggy brothers." One afternoon, William spotted Robert, his elder brother, entering the gates of the hall.
"I say," said William, "you've not joined that League of Perfect Loonies, have you? One of 'em told Ginger that woodlice had as much right to live as he had." "Ha! Woodlice! Crumbs!"
"I'm only going in," said Robert, "to get the lease for the sports field renewed." He spoke with an air of importance, as befitted the secretary of the local cricket and football clubs. The sports field was rented from the Botts and had been levelled and rolled till it was the pride of the neighbourhood.
"Well," said William, "tell me if they're doing anything funnier than usual."
While William was finishing his tea, Robert returned pale and distraught.
"She won't renew it," he said wildly.
Mrs. Brown carefully broke off a strand of darning wool.
"Who won't renew what, dear?"
"Mrs. Bott won't renew the lease. Not unless we all join her beastly league and promise never to take life in any form. Not even a blasted mosquito."
"Hush, dear," said Mrs. Brown. "Are you quite sure she understood what you wanted?"
"Of course she did," exploded Robert. "She won't let us have the field. It's enough to turn anyone into a murderer. There they were all clacking away like a lot of batty hens, and their beastly little dogs guzzling a chicken. What are we going to do with cricket starting next month?"
Mrs. Brown stopped darning. She only did that in moments of deep emotion. "It does seem a shame," she said.
The next afternoon, accompanied by his mongrel Jumble, William's wanderings led him to a farmyard, where a man and two boys were leaning over a stone enclosure. To William's delight, it was full of rats. The man explained it was the result of a ratting campaign on the farm buildings. He pointed to a fox terrier.
"Him's a champion ratter. Gonna be put in and timed."
William pointed to Jumble. "So's he a champion ratter," he said airily. The man looked critically at Jumble.
"All right," he said. "Give 'em 5 minutes each."
Overjoyed, William took off his coat and flung it carelessly on the side of the enclosure. Jumble soon got the hang of things and dealt destruction right and left like a small streak of lightning. The man looked at him appreciatively.
"Him's not a bad 'em, him ain't."
And William's heart swelled with pride. He retrieved his coat, and Superboy and Superdog swaggered along the road together. As they were passing the gate of the hall, a sudden thought arrested him. Robert and his sports field. He'd help poor Robert. He'd go in and he'd make the bots let Robert have the field. A woman carrying a moth-eaten pom was just entering. That meant a meeting of the league was in progress. Right. If there was any chicken going, then Jumble, the world's champion ratter, should have his share. Yes, he'd endure the meeting, and then he'd tackle the bots on the subject of Robert and the field. Mrs. Penniman stood at the front door, a bleary peak under her arm.
"What do you want, boy?"
she said.
"I've come to the meeting. Brought my dog along, too."
Mrs. Penniman looked at Jumble, then at William.
"My good boy," she said, "you can't come to a meeting in that state."
"Why not?" said William, simply. Mrs. Penniman was disconcerted. After all, why not? Could anyone be legally refused admittance to a public meeting because he was covered with mud and bits of grass and stick? She doubted it.
"Very well," she said, grudgingly.
William entered, the faithful Jumble at his heels.
"Oh, no, you can't take that dog in,"
said Mrs. Penniman. Dogs she was sure of.
"The other dogs have gone in," said William.
"We couldn't possibly have a dirty, smelly dog like that in the room. You can tie him to the railing."
William tied up the world's champion ratter to the railing and entered the hall grim and dogless. Mrs. Bott sat on the improvised platform in the drawing-room between a baronet's widow and a duchess's cousin. She was still intoxicated by the glory of high life. Mrs. Penniman glowered at William.
"Need you come into the room in that dirty coat?" she said coldly.
William took it off and threw it carelessly onto a chair by the door. The proceedings were opened by Mrs. Penniman, who showered compliments upon
our charming hostess, Mrs. Bott,
after which a knight of the garter got up to speak. His voice trembled with passion as he warmed to his theme.
"We have, ladies and gentlemen, a crying injustice to remedy. Some of our furred and feathered brothers have defenders in plenty. The horse has whole armies of champions. The dog," and he flashed a mouse-like smile at the moth-eaten pom, "is surrounded on all sides by admirers and veterinary surgeons and so forth. The cat has whole societies devoted to its well-being. Even birds have sanctuaries and coconuts and whatnot given them everywhere."
William sat in a silent ferment of rage. Robert's sports field taken away from him. Jumble not even allowed to enter the house where the moth-eaten poms would soon be guzzling on chicken. The voice went on.
"But I want to plead for those little defenceless brothers in our midst, who were daily ill-treated and even slaughtered. I am referring, ladies and gentlemen, to the gentle greenfly, the patient slug, the timid mouse, even our little brown brother, the rat. I say, ladies and gentlemen, that the wanton slaughter of these trusting little creatures is a disgrace upon our nation and our name. No food is spread for them, and yet when they try to take their share of sustenance from the ample bosom of our Mother Nature, what do? We murder them, ladies and gentlemen. If I had my way, everyone who subjected a living creature to such a fate should be made to suffer in the same way."
Feeble cheers from portions of the audience.
"And how harmless, how appealing are these little creatures whom we so ill use. Even the rat,
with his eager little eye, his brown furry coat, it—" The speaker froze suddenly, staring at the coat that William had thrown over the chair near the door. From the pocket, a brown form was emerging, and another. They were the survivors of the rat hunt, who had considered discretion the better part of valour, and had taken refuge in the pockets of the coat. The expectant eyes of the audience gradually shifted to the object of the orator's stricken gaze. A third rat was just emerging. For 1 second, a paralysis of sheer horror held them. Then a rat scuttled across the room to the curtain. Another disappeared behind a bookcase. The third remained in the corner by the door, cutting off all escape. The members of the audience leapt upon chairs and sofas, gathering their skirts about them. The orator took refuge upon the grand piano. The peaks, poms, and griffins fled beneath the sofa, whimpering with fright. "Help!" screamed Mrs. Penniman from her precarious perch upon a fern stand. "Do something, somebody, quick!" A gleam had come into William's eyes. He stood up. "All right," he said. "I got a dog outside what's a world champion ratter, and I'll fetch him in if you like." A rat scuttled across the room from the curtain to the fireplace. "Fetch him in, quick!" moaned Mrs. Penniman. The others screamed assent. William turned a basilisk eye upon Mrs. Bott. "Will you promise to let Robert have the field?"
"Oh, yes!" sobbed Mrs. Bott.
"Without joining your old league?"
"Yes!"
"And to let Jumble have some chicken stuff, same as the other dogs?"
"Yes, yes!"
William went to fetch Jumble, stepping carefully over the rat by the door. Jumble entered, and at once the room was a pandemonium of barking and growling and the smashing of ornaments and furniture. Then, out of chaos, emerged Jumble, proudly laying three carcasses at William's feet.
"Right, now I'll go and fetch Robert," said William, "and you can fix it up with him before you forget."
He returned a few minutes later, accompanied by a bewildered Robert.
"I can't explain exactly," panted William, "but they're going to let you have the field and go on killing things as much as you like."
Inside the hall was bustle and activity. The titled folk had all gone. The Pennimans were going. The League of Perfect Love had automatically come to an end. No one, for miles around, would ever forget how the members had implored William to fetch in his dog to kill the rats. The car that was to take the Pennimans to the station was already at the door. "Our efforts here have been wasted, Adolphus," Mrs. Penniman was saying. "There's no soul here, no spark of inspiration. It is time we went elsewhere." Downstairs in the study, Mr. Bott faced Robert and William, beaming expansively.
"Yes," he said. "I'll sign it with pleasure, young man. I couldn't do it against Mrs. Bott's wishes, but that's all right now. She's lying down till dinner time.
But she's her old self again."
He picked up a document.
"Here it is, young man. I sign here, and you sign here."
A few minutes later, Robert and William were walking down the drive, the agreement safe in Robert's pocket. Jumble trotted at their heels. Suddenly, William stopped.
"Crumbs!" he said. "I forgot to ask for Jumble's chicken stuff."
Then he looked down at Jumble. "Oh, well," he went on, "I don't think it matters. He's not really much of a chicken dog. He's more of a rat dog."